This program is part of Full Service Radio, an internet radio station and podcast network with over 32 weekly shows broadcasting from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. All of our hosts are Washington, D.C. locals, covering stuff like music, arts, culture, identity, politics, and so much more. Visit fullserviceradio.org for all of our programming and enjoy the show. Full Service Radio is also proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit www.simplecast.com. That's simplecast.com.
Welcome to the Window Seat on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, D.C. I am your host, Maya Muna Youssef, and today my guest is Jessica Silver, co-president of the D.C. chapter of Mocha Moms, co-founder of Sankofa, and program assistant for Little Genius. Today, we're going to talk about homeschooling, why the growing number of D.C. residents and residents from the entire DMV are choosing to educate their children at home, what this means for the future of our city and of our country. So before I get into that, I would just like to let you all know that coming up this Monday, please make sure you join us for our community center kickoff with the Adams Morgan Community Center, Amila, and the Adams Morgan Bid to celebrate Martin Luther King's legacy with a day of service. We're going to start the day with a light breakfast followed by a neighborhood cleanup, wrapping with lunch and a dedication of the Adams Morgan Community Center. Tunes by Full Service Radio, so make sure you guys come out. We're going to start at 8 a.m. and conclude at 3 p.m. with a performance by yours truly, Maimuna Youssef. Jessica Silver, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
You too. 2018.
Are you ready?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Happy.
Do you do vision boards?
I have never actually done a vision board specifically, but that doesn't mean that I don't have vision.
Right. Okay.
So I wouldn't say that I've done the vision boards, in its format that we know, but I have definitely put vision into how things are moving forward.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I normally do vision boards every year. I have not done one this year.
Okay.
But what I found to be really interesting is that this time last year, me and my son, we did a vision board together and the cat. He made one for the cat too. It was all her favorite snacks. Yeah.
Kitty got to have moves too.
Yes. No, and it's funny is because she put on a lot of weight last year.
Ooh,
so now her new
vision
board.
Was that in the
board,
plan?
No.
Was that in the vision?
She put a lot of snacks on there.
Ooh,
so this year, she's on a diet now. Okay. She has to lose 6 pounds.
You have to reduce the snacks.
Yeah. So okay. Her new vision board is her weight loss goals for 2018. But one thing I found interesting is that last year I put a picture of the pyramids in Mexico. Near Mexico City.
Oh, yeah.
Just randomly, I was like looking through books of my mom's, and I was like, oh man, I'd love to go to the pyramids. I've never been to the ones in Mexico. And this year, I got selected for the State Department tour.
Right.
And we went to those very pyramids.
The only ones I've ever been to are the ones in Chichen Itza.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go there?
No, we didn't go there. We went to Teotihuacan. I feel bad if I said this wrong. It's very long. It's maybe 30 minutes from Mexico City.
I know the one you're speaking
okay,
of.
Okay, yes. So those are the ones. I thought it was so interesting. I was like, oh my God, these are the ones. This is the one for my vision board.
And were you able to climb them?
Yeah.
Were you able to go up?
Yes. Well, yes.
Oh, okay. What happened?
We made it about halfway up. We got there a little bit late, so it was like closing.
Oh.
So, it took a long, like there was like a long line.
It
was a long time to get up there. So we got about halfway up.
Okay.
You know, we felt proud because, you know,
You got pictures,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do. And the stairs were all like kind of crumbling down, and we like had like a rope pull. It was really serious.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was going to be much more glamorous than that.
For me, the one in Chichen Itza, going up wasn't really the issue.
Going
it was
down.
The coming down.
It's really steep, right?
Very,
it's really scary.
And, you know, you were like, weren't these stairs bigger when I came up?
Right, right.
Yeah, so you had, literally, you were on your hands and knees going very slow, backwards.
Oof.
Yeah, don't
yeah,
look down.
Yeah, that's scary. No. That was scary. But, you know, I think what's wonderful about
homeschooling is that we live a very kind of unconventional lives. Yes. I know you travel a lot with your son as well. We get to travel and experience things and as a part of their education. I mean, some may call it unschooling. Some just call it homeschooling. But their school is not confined to a classroom. It's
no walls.
So tell me, what do you feel like is... what's your guide to education?
You know, for us, our family, I always say, kind of fell into homeschooling, whereas I think we definitely had an educational plan for our son, but we did not necessarily have homeschooling on the list at first.
Okay.
And when he was maybe 2 going towards 3 years of age, we had some changes and shifts and things in the corporate world that we were involved in. And so, you know, we were now faced with, okay, now what are we going to do with this child? And we were certainly already doing things at home in regards to education, you know, your basics, your colors, your letters, you know, different languages, and definitely giving him educational options. But thankfully, I had a pool already around me of people who were homeschooling. So it just kind of seemed like the natural thing to do. And when you realize that you do not necessarily have to have some, shall we say, initials behind your name, or some maybe even, you know, prefixes in front of it in order to teach. It's very liberating. And it's very real that you can have the world at your fingertips and offer it to your child, and also offer them things that they may not necessarily get in a traditional, quote unquote, traditional schooling situation at earlier ages or later, you know. And you can pace things the way you want to for your child. You can definitely introduce them to the type of material you want to introduce. You know, I used to kind of joke when my son was younger that, you know, he's going to know who George Washington is someday, but he's going to know who George Washington Carver is first. You know, right? We just going to put it in perspective. You know, so I want you to know your own, but I need you to know all that goes on in this world. And so there's us first, just for pride in yourself and pride in your people and pride in your heritage. And then we go further on from that. And then, you know, we've just been blessed to have, you know, someone, this child of ours that is, you know, very inquisitive, you know, definitely has questions and gets locked into certain lesson plans and is able to be taught in a various modes. So, you know, we got the visuals, we got the videos, you know, we have the music, you know, we definitely make sure we get the athletics in there. We definitely do worksheets, you know, this brother can sit down with a book and do some things too, as far as, you know, he doesn't always have to be off the page. So it's wonderful. It's been liberating.
And I know he takes several martial art forms. I know he does capoeira.
He's a busy person, yes. Let's see. He is a capoeista, yes. He does capoeira. He is also a footballer.
Okay.
And we're talking about, you know, world football. So soccer, as they call it in this country. He also does tennis. And, yeah, he's giving me cues over here. He's like, don't forget the tennis. What else do you do? Oh, his African drumming. How can I forget? He is a member of a performance group with Farafina Khan, and he has been literally doing drumming and capoeira since he was in diapers. So, yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting because so many people have misconceptions about homeschoolers. Like, I was I was just in the coffee shop down the street, and the guy who was serving us, he said, hey, he said, is it a day out of school today? You guys are out of school? I said, no, he's homeschooled. He said, oh, you must be really rich then. I said, no, you know, I'm doing all right for myself. But, oh, wow. Okay, well, I mean, isn't that like you got like guys in a weird religious group or something? And I'm like, no, we, you know.
That's a new one.
But it's interesting. People have a lot of misconceptions about homeschooling. They often say like homeschoolers don't know how to socialize. There are a lot of things that people tend not to really understand about homeschooling. And everyone homeschools for different reasons.
And differently.
Right.
Based on their what fits into their lifestyle in their home. You know, I think a lot of people, as you said, with the preconceived notions, think that, you know, we're all sitting around a table or in a desk somewhere and we're all got some books open and we're basically having school, what we know as brick and mortar type, you know, again, quote unquote, traditional school in our homes. And while there certainly may be portions of that type of thing going on in some homes, certainly that's not what it is.
Right.
We're also not always sitting around in our pajamas and our slippers, you know, with our feet up.
Right.
We're not always out either. Well, actually, that might be a challenge. Some of us are out. we make a joke sometimes. Okay, well, we're always at these functions. We're always at these field trips and doing things. who's at home homeschooling? Okay. You know, but anyway, learning happens all over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are a lot of, I remember hearing about the socialization big time, mm-hmm. And how that was going to be maybe a challenge. You know,
were you worried about that before you decided to homeschool?
I wasn't. I think because, first of all, we already had a group, a good circle of mm-hmm. friends and families. And thankfully, a lot of our families come from the perspective of the one-room schoolhouse type. Mm-hmm. Although we may not be actually doing certain learning, you know, with 8-year-olds and 15-year-olds right. in the same space. But when we come together and we have lunchtime and we have open time and social mm-hmm. time, those 15-year-olds are just as comfortable with the 8-year-olds and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I think that that is showing that they are the most socialized, because in a lot of instances, you don't necessarily see your teenagers, you know, looking out for the younger people, unless maybe they are siblings. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about families that are just part of a community. And, right. you know, so that leads me to think about, you know, our homeschooling group, Sankofa Homeschool Community, mm-hmm. you know, the community part of it is very intentional,
right.
that we put not only the word but also the action behind it. Right. We're not looking for folks to come around, you know, once or twice, or even usurp resources and mm-hmm. roll out. Mm-hmm. We're looking to build relationships and a community so that we have each other's backs, regardless of not only homeschooling but whatever else may come up in our
right.
lives.
That's very true. And I can definitely speak to that. I love the community that the Sankofa Homeschool community has built, because I've noticed even when people are experiencing hardship, death in the family, that everyone pulls together to yes. make sure they cook for each other and really support each other, you
it's
know.
It's like a village.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that doesn't exist anymore, like in a society that's very capitalistic and very about yes. me and mine, my household. I think that's a beautiful thing where that kind of village concept can still thrive, you know, somewhere.
I just had a sister friend that was in this area for a couple of years and mm-hmm. Was with Sankofa Homeschool and definitely doing things with our community, and then had to move mm-hmm. To Texas with mm-hmm. her family. And she visited during Kwanzaa time just a few weeks ago, and she just reminded me about the beautiful thing that we have going on in this area in regards to our community, yeah. in regards to, you know, the families that look out and are there for each other, because mm-hmm. she just simply said, you don't find that everywhere.
Yes, true. Now, I think another misconception is that homeschooling is a luxury.
Oh, like the man asked you, were you rich or something?
Yeah. Yeah, or it's kind of like you must be a housewife, you know, stay-at-home housewife who's afforded the luxury
oh my
to
goodness.
Homeschool. But there's a lot of sacrifice that goes into
definitely
into homeschooling.
Definitely.
Could you speak to that?
Well, it takes, first of all, just like your traditional, again, quote-unquote traditional boarding school, take a lot of time. In mm-hmm. other words, your child is doing things for significant hours during the day.
And they're always with you.
And they are always with you. And, you know, us having just one child each, we can only imagine what goes on with those multi-children families. But right. All the counting.
Please stop talking. Please.
Do I have everybody? Yeah, it's really, they are. They're with you all the time. But, you know, you come to see the blessing in that yeah. as well. We're joking, you know, because, of course, our children are older now, so they got more to say.
Right.
But it's a blessing. You know, that we get to know them so yeah. very well. We get to speak to them. I feel I get to speak to my son about topics that are maybe topics I wouldn't necessarily have brought up with him had such and such not happened, had we yeah. not seen certain things as we walked out of our community, mm-hmm. our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, put them in terms for his age range. But again, how do I know you might have gotten that in a classroom, you know, yeah. at the school that's up the street? And so when I think about how we can sacrifice, it's a beautiful thing to be yeah. able to have the time with your child.
Yeah.
And I think if we think about the families that are the majority of the society, think about your parent is possibly going to work, you mm-hmm. know, an 8-hour to maybe 10 to 12 hour job
right.
per day. Your child is in a learning environment, hopefully a good learning mm-hmm. environment, anywhere from maybe 6 to 8 to 10 hours a day. And then if there's an aftercare
right,
situation
exactly.
involved, that's another maybe 2 to possibly 4 hours.
Right.
And so by the time you see
dinner,
your child,
homework,
sleep
yeah.
you know, bathing and good night. And yeah. so the interaction is seriously
right.
less.
Right.
And so I'm thankful that we were able to see forward in mm-hmm. making a sacrifice, and that it was not even so much a sacrifice, but it was necessary.
Yeah.
We had our family really wanted to make sure that our child got an education that was coming from an African-centered
right.
point of view.
That's,
and that
about,
was yeah. coming from a standpoint of where our family wants to go
mm-hmm.
and where we came from. So both, you know, of the parents here have been out of this traditional system. Right. We've gone to public school and, you know, we've gone to higher education. But, you know, we knew that in this day and age, these children need more than that. I mean, we can go on a whole other tangent about our young black men, you know, in regards to how they're seen out here in society. So they need to have as much guidance and direction being given as possible.
And you know what I think I love to see about the new generation, like all of the young men who are your son's age and my son's age who all grew up together, they have like a sureness about themselves, a really strong confidence and just purpose in their being.
Yes.
That you don't see at their age.
Exactly.
From other young people. I mean, you know, I'm just noticing it like, wow, a lot of young people are very timid, especially if they have to talk to adults or in public settings. And it's just a lot of the young men who are homeschooled, I see their confidence and that they're prepared for the world that they're about to go in.
Yes.
I would say even for, like, I was homeschooled when I, you know, from maybe the time I was.
You're like one of the very few adults I know that.
Right, because, you know, a lot of the stereotypes he's talking about, it used to only be maybe religious groups in middle of America, mostly, you know, Caucasian families. There were not a lot of people of color in urban city who were homeschooling. I think my brother started it because he got put out so much. Yes, he's a jokester. He used to write like long cartoon columns about his teachers and... I mean, it was horrible, and he would tape them all over the school, and so you had to follow to get the storyline.
Wow.
But I mean, think about what kind of creative
imagination,
that's what we would see. We would see, wow, you're so creative, as opposed to his principal saw, like, wow, you're getting out of here, you're a troublemaker. But, you know, my mom was like, you know what, I'm going to homeschool him. And so she put him in art classes, and, you know, I mean, he just
he thrived.
Yes. And a lot of times, the students that are pegged as the most troublesome are just the most creative, and a lot of times the environments can't support their creativity.
It's reminding me of a story that my brother friend, who is an educator in the system, told me that last year he had a young man. He was maybe coming in to instruct a class, and he was going to be there for a few weeks, and he was told about this one student that was the problem child and never sits down, and he's always disrupting the class and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And he said, well, let me have a couple words with him, you know, and kind of see if I can tap into what's the issue, you know, because I don't want to have any problems, I want to move forward, we got things to do,
right?
And he said that the child just said to him, man, you know, I just really would, I like to stand up. He said, I just got this energy. He said, and I just want to stand up, you know, and they keep telling me to sit down. And so it's hard for me to stay still, you know, and I'm a little fidgety and whatever. So the Baba said that he went and got one of those more, a higher table, you know, say like a cocktail size table that he could raise up. And he put a stool next to there for the student to sit down if he wanted. But he told him he didn't have to. He said he had no problems out the brother. So as in, all he needed to do was stand up.
Wow.
But because we're in a society that, of course, wants to cookie cut, you know, wants everything, you know, in that certain way. And
everyone
don't
has
forget,
to learn the same.
And don't forget, the whip is still there just because you may not see it in their hands, you know. And you won't sit down. That he had no problems out of this child, that he flourished in the class, you know. And he said it was that simple to fix.
Right.
But nobody thought outside the box to do something like that.
You know,
so that just tells a great deal about.
Because we don't, I mean, I think that's the beauty of homeschooling, because you don't have a classroom of 30, so you can really kind of hone in on what, you know, what makes your child tick.
Yes.
Like, I know my son is very competitive, so, he said yours too.
Yeah.
So if I wanted him to learn something that he didn't want to learn, that wasn't particularly his favorite subject, I had to make it a competitive game where someone won and someone lost, you know?
Right.
And then he got it. He picked it up.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times, no one takes that time out. It's like, either you learn like this or you don't learn at all, or you're not smart, or you need to take medication.
And I think it's even a little bigger than that, where regards, it's the systems that put these kind of constraints that you're just speaking of on the instructors. Because although we have a variety of educators out here, most of them have hopefully gone to school on their own to achieve, you know, a certain level of education themselves, and then are able hopefully now to be in a position where they're able to instruct children, and do that through different, you know, methodologies. However, if you have, like you said, 30 children in a classroom, I mean, about the only way you can keep order is if you got everybody in your little box and staying in the box and not getting outside of it, because otherwise I'm losing control of the 30 people that's in here.
Right.
You know, and so that then speaks to the system that's in place. And I know that that's primarily a big reason why we see a lot of families taking their children out of the system, and bringing them into homeschooling, because their needs are simply not being met. Their learning styles are not being adapted to or addressed. Like you said and mentioned, they're looking to get them on some type of medication, which they think is going to, I guess, calm them down.
But and being misdiagnosed.
Definitely.
A lot of times.
Definitely. So that's a big part of it. So, yes, I think homeschooling offers so many benefits to families that are willing not just to sacrifice, but really be able to step up and do literally do more for your child.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica. We're going to take a quick break for some music right here.
Great.
You've been listening to Full Service Radio.
Many would charm you. Look at how far we've come. Look at how many didn't last this long. Baby, we're so strong. And all the lies that they told about us still can't stop us. 'Cause we're stronger than ever when we stand together. Never lose faith in each other. We're unbreakable. We're unshakable.
We are back with Full Service Radio. This is Maimuna Youssef. I am your host. We are broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Here talking about homeschooling on this nice chilly day. It's actually a warmer day than we've had in the past week, so I am grateful for it. But I'm hosting today. Normally, you all probably see me on stage performing. I'm a singer, songwriter, MC. Shameless plug. Find me at MumuFresh.com or at MumuFresh on my Instagram. But aside from being a singer, musician, I'm also a homeschooling mom. And so today I wanted to bring in Jessica Silva, who's co-founder of the Sankofa Homeschool Collective and co-president of the D.C. chapter of Mocha Moms, and talk about, you know, what I do when I'm not on stage. So we were just following up. We were talking about just the life of homeschoolers, some of the misconceptions that people have, and the joy of being with our children. One of the things I thought was interesting, and I love that Mama Monica Utsi always keeps us to date with what's keeps us up to date with what's happening on the political scene in regards to homeschooling.
Yes.
And I know recently she just posted a link to some information about what the new tax reform laws means for homeschooling families.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of times we're not able to always write off, you know, homeschooling sometimes can be expensive when we're paying all types of classes and things like that. And it's not seen, you know, the same way you can write off daycare is not the same for homeschooling.
Exactly.
So you want to speak a little bit about the 529 plans?
Yes. By the way, Monica Utsi is the co-founder of the Sankofa Homeschool Community, and she definitely has her finger on the pulse of so much information on the edge for homeschoolers.
Yeah, you should totally
from
be on
a variety of sources. So she's magical with that.
She is.
But yeah, she just sent an email out. I think it was either yesterday or the day before in regards to this. So HSLDA, which is the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which is an organization that assists homeschoolers in a lot of things, legal lees, and helping to make sure that they're following standards and or if any of the literally government authorities may come after you in regards to what you're doing for homeschooling, because you do have to register still your child with the state that you are homeschooling. And it's different everywhere you may go, you know, Virginia versus Maryland versus another state, and certainly the district as well. But this article was discussed discussing how the 529 plan, had it been passed for homeschoolers, could have provided an additional financial tool,
right,
to assist with upper schooling for your children, college savings, and things of that nature. But apparently, all the law was passed in this certain tax bill that just ran through, but only for those who are already registered in, again, traditional
schools. Why do you think that is? Because I find that a lot, where homeschoolers are kind of excluded and marginalized or just not really considered. It's almost like, well, you have the option to go to public school, so if you want to do that, it's on you. When it's like, yeah, we have the option, but have you seen the state of our public schools?
Right.
Is that really an option?
I think that people are realizing that it's not necessarily the best option. And there are people who are working full-time jobs and homeschooling. You know, they're doing it in the evenings, they're doing it on the weekends. They're doing it when they can because this model that we have in our system does not work for their child.
Right.
I think that a lot of time homeschoolers are left out of these situations twofold. Number one, because we may not have the voice to really speak for us. I mean, we have such organizations as, you know, HSLDA, but again, they may not speak for the majority of homeschoolers, as well as it's challenging to then say, oh, you're going against, like you just said, you know, you're going against the grain, you're homeschooling, you're not coming into the system.
Right.
You're not letting our dollars that we get for every head that's in that school to that school district, you just took one out.
Yeah.
And so you just literally took, as far as, you know, these systems may think, thousands of dollars out of our hands.
Right.
And you know, we joke all the time that we don't need much. I mean, you could hook a family up with, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8,000 really per year, which is not a lot. If we think about how much is allotted for every, again, head that's in these public schools, you know, and don't go on a charter in private. And how much, you know, that calculates to. We don't need that much.
Right.
And then, yes, then people are doing, that's where, again, we talk about sacrifice. That's an additional expense that is now having to be taken out of your family's budget in order to allow for, you know, we still need school supplies.
Right.
We still, you know, need not necessarily school clothes, but, you know, we need to go on field trips. We need to maybe have our children in, like you said, different classes as they begin to get older, or if they have certain learning challenges and things of that nature. So there's definitely an expense associated with it.
And I think it could also help to resolve some of the social issues that we may have. I mean, think about how much violence there is within, just even at school, you know, to have parents be more involved, you know, because with homeschooling, I mean, you know, you're every child's emotion. You're privy to it. You're around for it. You know how they learn, how they don't learn, what, you know, what upsets them, what their strengths are, what their challenges are. I think having parents be able to be involved in that, to that depth, it really creates more whole people to put back into society.
Definitely.
You know,
I hear a lot of parents talking about, especially again, these families that have had their children in the system and now bring them out to homeschool, have talked about how such a challenge with getting in touch with the teacher, you know, making appointments. They do have maybe at least a once or twice opportunity to do so. But if they make, you know, something that's off the calendar to address something about their child, it's a challenge. And I'm saying that in a nice way. But then it becomes, you know, a situation where now I'm not able to, as a parent, really be part of this learning process and environment because you feel as if you, you know, own my child while he's or she is in this building, and then when I get to look to put in some input, it's not well received.
Right.
And so these are some of the feedback that we hear from parents, because we inquire, you know, so what led you to homeschooling, when people come to ask, or, you know, what's going on with your child's educational situation? And these are the stories we're hearing. You know, they wanted to put the child on medication. They don't want to listen to the child's learning strengths. They don't want to teach to those. And so I understand certainly that you cannot single out every child, again, if you have 30 in a classroom. But these are the challenges that are happening, and these are some of the things that are turning a lot of families to consider homeschooling.
You know what else I think is really interesting is, you know, when you go to do your homeschool review, that some of the requirements for homeschoolers, they don't even have them for public school.
At all.
Like, for instance, you have to have a music credit.
Right.
Now, for instance, that's fine for me because I'm a musician.
Sure,
so I
can,
you know, teach my son at home. But I'm thinking, like, but the public schools, most of them don't even have music class. But homeschoolers have to have a music credit.
Not at all.
I think it's crazy. You know, I don't mind. I mean, I feel like it's great to have music at home, but I just think it's funny to have a higher standard, you know, of requirement for individuals as opposed to a funded system, you know.
And I also think it's on the lower side, where you'll see, you know, some of the reviewers saying that people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. For the most part, I hear feedback from our folks saying, our reviewer thinks that we're just, how do you do all this?
Right.
This is fabulous. Right. They should be, can I get a copy of that?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, because they're just so amazed at all of the things that you're able to come up with, not just as a parent, but again, as an educator, realizing that when, yes, my audience is smaller, as in, you know, if I'm teaching the one, two, or three children, you're going to be able to do so much more. And I even have, you know, the situation at our homeschool collective where we offer classes in the fall and the spring, that we still keep our numbers low there. We don't offer any classes to be higher than 20 students.
Right.
And that's actually, if that's teenagers. Mm-hmm. And we also have a limit to start with at least maybe 8 to 10. We want to keep it small so that we can keep the ratio for learning, you know, still tangible.
And I think what's so amazing is that, like, for instance, for me, I'm not a teacher. I did not look at myself as a teacher before, you know, homeschooling my son. Mm-hmm. It really was a necessity. But I learned certain strengths about myself I didn't know I had. Like, for instance, when I first started homeschooling, he was in the kindergarten. And one of the things that you had to do was be able to differentiate similarities and differences.
Okay.
And so they would say, you know, circle the clowns with the red nose and put an X on the clown with the blue nose. And I would notice he would go, circle, circle. As he's circling the, you know, the red clowns, he would go, oh, get out of here, blue clown. And he would X him out, you know, with all this aggression. I said, that's kind of interesting that he has to do this for page after page, circling the things that are the same and Xing out the thing that's different. Is that not teaching intolerance on a subconscious level?
Check that out.
Because to me, I'm saying, you know, as a person of color, he's going to be the blue clown, you know, the clown with the blue nose.
Right.
And so not only is it teaching intolerance of things that are different, but it's also teaching, I would say, you know, self-hatred to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And so I said, baby, why don't we put like a triangle on the things that are same and put a rectangle on the things that are different?
Yeah.
Automatically, his whole energy towards it changed.
So
it wasn't this like, oh, get out of here, you thing that's different. It wasn't that anymore. And so I brought it to his teacher and I said, has anyone ever, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I think it's a little weird that he has to cross out. I mean, everyone knows in our society, X means something that's bad, something you want to get rid of. And you're Xing out the thing just because it's different. That's the only thing that makes him have to be Xed, you know.
And their response
And of course,
was,
she was like, get out of here. I know what I'm doing. You don't. You're not a teacher. And I just said, well, you know, I may not be a teacher, but I know how my child responded.
Mm-hmm.
And when I gave him something very simple, a simple change, he's learning the same concept.
But you saw the shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, a negative thing anymore.
Right.
And I think that I learned by having to teach him, like, what things were subconsciously being taught to our children.
Yes.
And even, like, so my first time going to a public school, I was in the 10th grade. And I remember... my teacher asked for me to be removed because she said, I talk too much. I want to have discussion too much.
Okay.
She's like, listen, just learn it and take the test. I'm like, well, how could this happen at this time? If this was happening in this country at that time, let's discuss these things. How does it
I have a question.
Tie in? Yeah, no. And it was like, listen, school is not about, you know, finding new information.
No opportunity for discussion.
No, not about analyzing and compare and contrast.
Just take it and take the test, like she told you. Reminds me of a documentary that was out some years ago called Race to Nowhere. And it was following several families and in regards to their school journey. And the majority of the children were learning all types of things, but they were given to them in such a short amount of time and then had to be tested on it, then get new information and then be tested on that they didn't retain anything.
Right.
So when you would go back and ask them, you know, something about from even 2 days to 2 weeks ago, they had no clue.
Right.
And it just reminded, what are we doing? What are we pushing for?
Right.
You know, are we pushing for these test results? And then, so what's the basis of those test results? Okay, so the children got, let's say, these great glowing marks.
Mm-hmm.
What do they know? Now, if we ask them the same questions 2 weeks or 2 days later, what do they know?
And it's not tied into context. It doesn't make sense in context. Like, I'll tell you again, for my son, not only is he very competitive, he likes to make money.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's a definite incentive.
So
for a brother,
I was trying to teach him percentages and he was really like he's hanging out of the chair and like he's picking lint off the cat and, you know, he's just like totally not interested. I started having him run my merch table at my shows.
Okay.
And I said, OK, well, you get 10% of everything you sell. If you work harder, I'll give you 15%. the boy is he's a genius at percentages now.
Got that. Yeah, that came in real quick. Because
now it's context. Now it's like, okay, this is money in my hand. So now you can ask him any question about percentages. And now to him, it's money.
And so that is taking not only a simple educational lesson, right, on percentages that we all need to know, recognizing that it's not just it's not here and now. It's a life skill. And this is how you applied it. And then you took it to his real life and then was able to apply it. And so now he has learned it, like you said. I remember same thing with my son when he was younger and we were doing addition and subtraction. And he was all about some addition. He would sit there. Mm-hmm. He would do as much addition as you asked him to. Mm-hmm. Subtraction, oh my, again, falling out the chair. Right. You know what I mean? You know, the sky must turn red. And and just couldn't do it. I said, what is the problem? I even, you know, got a good brother friend who's a math teacher to come and tutor him for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I said, what is wrong with this brother? He can't do subtraction. I know he know how to do it. So he got there, and maybe this is, again, this is, you know, that difference between Mars and Venus. Mm-hmm. Baba sat down with him and he said, so I heard you know, you're not so into a subtraction. You know, what's up? What's the problem with subtraction? Right. You don't like it? What's up? And my son said, well, you know, he said, I like addition because you get more. You add on. Right, he said, with subtraction, you get less. And I don't want to have less.
Right.
He said, I want to, and this is, you know, second grade, he's, what, six years old. Yeah. And so he said, I don't want to have less. You know, I want to know how to build and get more.
Come on, abundance and then consciousness.
And then he said, oh, so you talking about economics.
Right.
So we have to put it in that perspective for you. And so when he came with the lesson after that conversation, first of all, now I was just amazed that he had the sense to sit there and ask him, why don't you like subtraction? That question never even came into my mind.
Right.
But then the lesson came after that was regarding economics, regarding the household, regarding bills, regarding things that you're going to have to do when you get to be a parent, like your parents are doing for you now.
Yeah.
And recognizing that subtraction has to be a part of the equation because there is the giving and the taking and the receiving and the, you know, selling and everything.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can subtract some debt.
And now this brother is, you know, all, you know, he's working on, you know, outer operations and pre-algebra now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that just tells you again, the example you gave, the example I gave, that if you do something that can speak to them and they can see in real life being applied, then they understand why it is. I mean, we've had it in our schooling. I know I have. Mm-hmm. Right. You sit around with, when am I ever going to use this concept that we're talking about in my life? After, you know, from this point out of this classroom, like when I'm 30 and 40 and 50 years old, am I going to use this? Mm-hmm. I was going through some schooling of my own just the other day, and I showed him that these elements of math are still being used in the hospitality industry that I have some background in. And so I was showing him how to figure out average rates, how to figure out occupancy percentage, how to figure out RevPAR, and, you know, all these fat formulas. I said, so the things we're talking about, I said, look at this order of operations. When we want to do a percent change, we got to figure out last year versus this year, but we got to figure that out first in the parentheses, right? Then we divide it by last year.
Right.
He said, oh, that's order of operations. So I'm getting him to show that this is not stuff we're looking for you to just run through for the heck of it.
Right.
There is an actual real life application.
Yeah. And it'll help you going forward.
And it helps so much.
Well, would you like to say a few words before we go?
You, little person over there.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Epherson Kwame, and I am the son of Mama Jessica, 11 years old, homeschooled. Actually, just finished doing some schoolwork 3 hours ago, maybe. And in a book, I did some cursive, then I did some math, I think, a little bit of math, and some writing and science.
You know what? I love that. I love how he was just ready. He came to the front. He's been, how does it feel like when we talk about you in third person? That doesn't bother you at all?
No, it does bother me a little bit. Just a little bit.
Just a little. They're like, oh, they're talking about me like I'm not right here.
Especially you, mama.
Especially you, mama.
Still love you, Pat. Still love you.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you all so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I mention just one more thing? I wanted to let folks know that we do have several organizations, you know, in the community that are assisting and helping our homeschool children. In addition to Sankofa Homeschool Collective, which you can look online at sankofahomeschool.org. We also have a science and math organization that's been in operation for almost 11 years.
Amazing.
And that's Little Genius Science and Math. And your son and mine have both been in Little Genius.
Indeed.
And it is available, Little Geniuses on Facebook, you know, the young people did that, you know, the teenagers, they put us on Facebook.
Oh, did they?
Oh girl, they got us on Instagram.
Don't you
they got
love me doing, it? Like, they're the next generation.
They got me doing digital newsletters and all this. So, yes. Did you want to talk about Little Genius?
He has one more thing.
I want to talk about my social media.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, we're going to go back to...
He said, Ma, let me plug myself.
Right, right. So anyway.
I'm branding over here.
We really do have a lot of opportunities available for our children in the homeschool community. And that, you know, again, our African-centered, that are run by people who look for us and by us, that yes. are able to show our children that we have the intelligence, we can do so much, and look at who did it first. So like mm-hmm. with Little Genius Science and Math, we make sure to show them inventors and creators, yeah. both male and female, who have done things. And that's another thing the children had to enlighten us at some point. You know, we were bringing out these black inventors, and a lot of them had already transitioned, no longer with us. And, you know, at some point we bring out the black inventor, and Are they alive? You know, and they looked like right. they just wasn't enthused. Like, is anybody alive that's still creating stuff?
Right.
And so it was a reneg for us to say, oh, okay, we got to come up with, of course, you know. And mm-hmm. so now we still, you know, have to refer back to good old George Washington Carver sometimes. But we make right. sure that we, you know, pull out people like Philip Elamia Agwale and those who are current.
But I love that, because my son started at Little Genius when he was four mm-hmm. and was not necessarily interested in science. But now that's like... all he thinks about all yeah. day, like on his own. He's looking up tech companies.
Right.
He's trying to find what's the new technology. He, you know, he wants to create like some kind of company organization of inventors that get together and come up with new ideas to
love
improve
it.
Technology, make it more eco-friendly, different things like that. And I definitely have to say I owe that to Little Genius.
Beautiful.
Because he wasn't even thinking in that. Because that's not, you know, I'm from a family of artists, you know.
Yes.
We make music,
right, right,
you know,
right.
that's what
exactly.
we do. So I think it's just so beautiful that he's able to find his own path, you know, through being exposed to something different, you know.
And I think that, you know, you have to learn to, as we do with homeschooling often, is teach to a child's strengths,
mm-hmm.
Such as, you know, how my son really cares for football. And so we would talk about, you know, how to get those goals in the upper 90 quadrant of
right.
the goals area. And, you know, another Monica, a friend of mine, made sure that when her older son was a little younger, she taught everything through basketball, like no matter what it was, because he loved basketball so much, as long mm-hmm. as she put a basketball spin on it,
right.
he was with the lesson. And so that's, again, the beauty of it. You can really teach your child's strengths, your child's mm-hmm. interests, and, you know, from your perspective.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica, for coming in and talk. This has been an amazing conversation.
Yes.
You know, I love talking with my fellow homeschooling moms and dads. Go homeschooling dads
out
there.
That's right. Bob is doing it out
yes,
there.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you, Aoife Sen, for coming on and speaking to us. I appreciate you. One last plug. I want to plug an event that's happening this weekend at the Colony Club. Ko Kai, who is the president of the DC chapter of the Recording Academy, we're going to be doing a live interview and performance at the Colony Club this Saturday at 11 a.m. And also, again, don't forget to come to the community kickoff on MLK Day. We will be cleaning up and talking to the community about all the wonderful programs that will be available at the Amila Center. And of course, we're going to have the full service radio pumping the good tunes, right? And again, I just want to thank everyone for tuning in and for listening. And please share with a friend. Tell your friends, like, yo, y'all have to check out full service radio. Like, it's Die Like Liddy. So again, this is Maimuna Youssef. Thank you for tuning in to Full Service Radio, The Window Seat.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.